Yeah, I think we're cooking with gas. 7-7-20-23. Oh my gosh. 2 + 2 = 4 + 3 = 7. So it's 7-7-7. Neighbor of the beast. Good evening, everybody. I hope that you are having a wonderful afternoon. Hope you had a great week and are looking forward to a superb but not superfluous weekend. And let me just see here. Is this cooking? Yes. Yes, it is. All right, that's great. Well, hit me with a why if you have some concerns about inflation. I'm just, you know, I'm just curious. Yeah, hit me with a why if you have some concerns about inflation. You do, right? Yeah. I mean, so the sex position 69 has actually been increased to 96. It's been increased to 96 because, I mean, the costs of eating out are just through the roof, right? So just to be aware of that. You're an economics major, that's right. So you've studied this stuff, you know what I'm talking about. All right, let's see here. Questions, comments, issues, challenges, problems. Feed me. It's so funny, like on one of these cameras, which is like this webcam over here, I look vaguely human. On this one, I still look like I'm an irradiated flounder fish or a slightly unwell beluga. So, hit me with a why if you smoke pot. Do you smoke pot? Are you a pothead, a deadhead? Hit me with a why if you smoke pot. Nope, big nope, big nope, big nope. Yeah, it's pretty rough, man. It's pretty rough. There's a new study that's just come out of Denmark. They did a lot of people. And there does seem to be a pretty strong link between a clear link between cannabis abuse and mental illness. So I've said this from the very beginning. I'm willing to forego a few positive responses from general deadheads to just point out that it's bad for you. It's bad for you as a whole. So I would suggest very much not doing that. Now, if you would like to support the show, tell me which book. Okay, let me ask you this. Which book am I writing next? What am I writing next? What am I working on starting? Well, actually started today. What am I working on? I've been casting about. Been casting about. Oh, yeah, you guys know. You guys know. How to spot pedophiles. Well, just those who are against UPB. So, yes, I have racked my brain for a plot outline for the future part two. I just did about everything I could think of. I whiteboarded. I chatted with friends and family about what I could write about. And for whatever reason, it just didn't come to me in a way that was, I was like, well, Arlo actually survived and became a bad guy and hunts down the New Eden community. Like, I came up with just about everything I could imagine. It's their grandchildren, and this is the final battle to liberate people from an oppressive government, you know. And it was like, all of it was fine, and I probably could pull something off, but it just wasn't. You need some central core driving something to get yourself all the way through the monstrous intellectual labor of putting together a book, particularly a book set in a not you universe. So yes, we are, my researcher / S researchers and I are doing the Peaceful Parenting book. It is set. We've got an outline, and it's going to be great. It's going to start off with the history of parenting. For those of you who don't know what parenting and childhood has been like throughout history, the current state of parenting and the amount of violence that's unleashed against children on a daily basis, the statistics and the data. And then we're going to go into the science of, and this has always been the challenge, which is the science of why violent parenting is so bad for children. And then we are going to the moral case and what you do if you're not violent with your children, like how to approach these kinds of issues. Autograph copies might be available, might be. Is AI helping with the book? Not as yet. I'm going old school. The problem with AI is it hallucinates. It hallucinates things. So it's basically, it's creative, but on drugs. So no, I've just ordered like a massive crate of books to do the history of parenting. And of course, you can go to freedomain.com/books. You can check out my reading of Lloyd DeMoss's The Origins of War and Child Abuse. But you would be absolutely shocked at what parenting has been like throughout most of human history. Long-term effects of abuse. Yeah, we're doing the whole thing. Why is it that children who are abused tend to live 20 years shorter than the general population? The effects of fatherlessness, the effects of spanking, the effects of sexual abuse, drug addiction, like all of the latest data. We are going to make a case that is going to be highly volatile in its absolute inescapability. This is one of the reasons it's taken me so long, is I want to make a case where if you say, don't believe it, if you say, no, that's not for me, if you say no, you're wrong. You're wrong. It just, the case has to be airtight, inescapable. I feel like I'm going to be a lawyer for the ages, striding in the courtroom of the world, condemning all of those who refuse to see. That is the general idea, the general argument, the general approach. So that's what we're doing. And yes, you can support the stream. There's a QR code for those of you watching on other platforms. There's a QR code right there. You could help out. I would really, really appreciate that. A QR code is going to stay top left, and you can help out the show. It's all massively appreciated. Thank you so much for all of your very kind support and kindness and generosity. Now, of course, we have a thing here where you can ask your questions and do this. All right. So let's get people's questions. Let's put them up. Let's put them up. All right. Somebody asks, how are you able to withstand the slings and arrows of abusers who try to stand in the way of your work? That is a very good question. Thank you for the donation. Yes, support a peaceful parenting book. I assume not less than 4, but hopefully not more than 6 months to do it, soup to nuts. And the big challenge is the scientific research. So yes, the challenge is how are you able to withstand the slings and arrows of abusers who try to stand in the way of your work? Well, that's a great question. It's not always easy. I'll be honest with you. It's not like I'm some, you know, golden god of inhuman indifference floating far above the mere petty squabbles of the mortal world and so on. Yeah, there are times when it's a challenge. You get involved in questions of justice and morality because you care enormously about justice and morality. Right? That's what you do. Right? That's what you do. You care about this stuff. And so when you are treated unjustly and in an immoral fashion, it's not easy. It's not a lot of fun sometimes. Again, for the most part, I don't really think about it. But, you know, occasionally it's just like, oh, yeah, there is that little thing there. So it is one of the terrible aspects of the world that, you know, in the society that I grew up in, I mean, I grew up in a British society, a very safe society. I traveled, I took planes from the age of 6 upwards on my own. I traveled all over the city from the age of 5 and upwards all on my own or with friends and so on. I grew up in just a super safe society, and the society was safe because people cared about their reputations. They cared about being judged negatively, and the authorities who were able to provide such security to some degree had a certain amount of legitimacy to them. And so what happens in society is you have authorities that have a certain amount of legitimacy, and then bad people take them over, and they use people's prior respect for that authority to grind dissenters into the dust, or at least to try to. So it is the gig, so to speak. The gig is to be attacked, right? I mean, I'm not alone in this. I'm not solitary about this. Hit me with a why. If you have been attacked for doing good or trying to do good in your life, hit me with a why. And if you want to go into any details, that's fine as well. Right? I'm not alone. It's not like I'm taking all the bullets and you're all sitting on hammocks with my ties on your hairy bellies. I mean, of course you have, right? You've tried to do good in your school. You've tried to do good in your family. You've tried to do good in your social circle. You've tried to help people with their parenting. You've tried to help people with their addictions. You tried to help people with debt or various other issues, with promiscuity, with drinking. You've tried to do this. And it's tough, right? It's very, very tough to get these things done in any positive way. Somebody says, bullied at church for speaking out against the scapegoating of whites. Yes, my parents hate the good I emulate and model. No thanks to them. I did, but the upside of growing up in a toxic environment is that you learn to ignore people. Right. Yeah, you talked about COVID-19, the vax, taxation by force, and so on. Right. And somebody says, Andrew says, yes, every time, especially with the anti-spanking argument. Yeah. Yeah. You know, one of the things you guys don't want to rant this early, do you? Is it premature ranting? You don't want to rant this early, do you? Do you? Is it too soon? Don't I need to buy you a little dinner first and tell you how beautiful you are and look deeply into your eyes and get you some flowers? It's too soon? Don't goad me, man. No flowers? You want raw dog rant time? Rant away? Why do you all seem to love the rants? Pre-ejacking ranting. That's right. Ever since I was a teenager, I've suffered from premature elaboration, so sometimes thinking about Margaret Thatcher in a onesie helps a lot. Okay, so we know the term racism. We know the term Islamophobia. We know the term homophobia. We know the term sexism. We know the term paranoia of just about every group, persecuted or otherwise, known to man. You know what word we don't have in society? What's the biggest group that is discriminated against in society? What is the biggest group that is discriminated against in society? That's right. It is the brilliant midgets known as children. No, it's not white straight men, although they're not far behind. But yes, so it is. You know, we have no word for prejudice against children. We have racism. Do we have childism? Bigotry, prejudice, dismissal of humanity, dismissal of moral obligation. We have nothing. No word, no concept that describes the massive prejudice that society has against children. All right, my friends, fuel the beast. Throw nitrogen in the bubbles of the fire of my intellect, to mix my metaphors, and drive everyone down the bends. Give me some examples of the prejudice that society has against children. Ageism? We have ageism, but that's always directed at the elderly. It's never directed at the young. There's no childism. Daycare? That's right. That's right. National debt? Absolutely. It's okay to hit them for noncompliance. Absolutely. Absolutely. Do we listen to them? Do they have authority in our lives? Genital cutting? Absolutely. Justifying violence as, quote, discipline? Absolutely. Absolutely. Forced to do boring, meaningless homework for hours? Abortion? Molestation? Well, molestation is still illegal, but it's far more common than it's reported. Forced medical procedures? Well, parents do have to make some decisions about these kinds of things. Children don't have that. Adults don't give their thoughts credibility. Absolutely. It's like there's this weird radar, you know, below 4.5 feet, people don't exist. I know what's best for you. Then no explanations. Right. And of course, it is the most involuntary relationship in all of society. In all of society, if you have the chance as a woman, as a reasonably attractive woman, you probably have 10 to 20 guys who would be willing to date and marry you. Easy, easy. I'm not even counting the orbiting beta friend zone. You have like 20 guys. So you get to choose out of 20 guys. You get to, they all want to ask you out. They want to go on dates. They want to get to know you. They want to be your boyfriend. They want to marry you. They want to father your children. You got like 20 guys. of various levels of quality and this, that, and the other. Now, of those 20 guys, you can choose a bunch to date, you can choose a bunch to turn into boyfriends, and you can choose one to marry. You have all that choice. You can test drive these relationships for months or years if you want. And you do. Generally, people do. You have all the choice in the world, all the vetting in the world. And then you marry the guy, and then it's like, no, I'm not happy. No, it's not working out for me. I think I'm just going to leave. And this could happen even after years of dating, but it can happen after marriage. It can happen after kids. So you get all the vetting in the world. And if you are a woman in general, in particular, I can know that 70% of divorces or 80% of divorces, depends on how you count, are initiated by women. But it's not like they just wake up one day. A lot of times it's because the man's been just a jerk for a long time. It's not all women's fault, of course, right? Got to be fair. But if you get the chance to vet a guy and then you complain about the guy, what would a sane society say to a woman who had the chance to vet a guy for years, chose to marry him, chose to have children about him, and then complained? What would a sane society say to these women? What would they say? There used to be a phrase, you made your bed, now lie in it. Yeah, well, not tough luck. You know, hey, yeah, it's tough, right? I understand. Yes, there's complaints in this world. There's complaints in this life. Now, suck it up and get on with your marriage. Suck it up and go love your husband. Suck it up. And if you need couples therapy, you need, suck it up, get some therapy. Just too bad, right? Like, men, if you're a dude in this conversation, right? You're a man in this conversation. Please do me a solid, do me a favor. Tell me the last thing that you got genuine sympathy for that you complained about. You complained about something, you had an issue about something, you had a negative statement about something. What was the last thing you got genuine, deep empathy and sympathy for? Help me out. Tell me. Death of your father? All right, fair. Nothing? Nothing? Right. A sickness? Nothing? No. Right. I'm just waiting for people to catch up, but they're typing. I'm just going to tell everyone I can read. These two join in. Outside chosen family, I can't remember it at all. Men complaining is an oxymoron. Yeah. We complain often with a bullet to the head, right? Major surgery from my doctor, the only time ever. I've been seriously sick or injured and nothing. Right. Sympathy for most men is like indifference to beautiful women. It just doesn't happen. It doesn't show up. It doesn't occur. Wisdom teeth removal? My car repair cost? I doubt. I doubt that enormously. Right, so do you complain as a man? You don't complain as a man because it's weakness, isn't it? It's weakness. You're just supposed to suck it up and deal with it. And these are things that can be genuine tragedies that you didn't cause that are just a problem and an issue. So you don't complain as a man. It's futile. We don't complain. Complaining, tell me if this... Never cried and had a bunch of resources flow my way, right? So let me ask you this as a man. And this is not the case for everyone, but as a man, hit me with a B if complaining makes things better and hit me with a W if it makes them worse. B for better, if you complain, is it B for better or W for worse? Right. Every single man here is saying that complaining makes things worse. Now, why? Why does it make it worse? World Wide Web. Why does it make it worse? What is worse when you complain? Who respects a complainer? Well, society respects women who complain. No one cares. Scorn, rejection, and hostility. Oak trees don't bitch. It's like the strangest haiku. It makes you sound weak. No one likes negativity. Right. They need you back in that trench. Gives away self-sovereignty. I'm not sure. I don't complain. Right. Worse, this show made me a pro sniffer of bullshit excuses, and it's a great screener for people that have showed up in my life. Right. So if you're a man in general and you complain, you then have to deal with whatever you're complaining about plus the lack of support and sometimes outright hostility of the people you're complaining to. Somebody says, Doug says, I feel like you always figure shit out before I can complain about it. Right. Have you experienced this? Hit me with a why. If you've experienced you complaining about something and people's reactions make you feel worse. Like you're being punished for complaining about something. Like they're giving you negative stimuli. They are Pavlov-style triggering you to have a negative experience when you complain, so to train you out of complaining. We call that hazing at work. They just shit on you. Yeah. Yeah, it is the case, right? 100%. Men are punished for complaining and women are rewarded for complaining. That's why men don't nag and women nag. Women get rewards for complaining and men get punished for complaining. I found peace when you recently said nothing is coming to save men. Right. Right. So, as a man, complaining makes things worse. Because here's the funny thing, right? I mean, a lot of times women will say to men, I want you to share your emotions. Oh, no, no, not those ones. I want you to express yourself to me. Tell me what's on your mind. No, 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 not that stuff. Just want you to be yourself. No, no, not if being yourself means that. It's like, come and help me in the kitchen. No, not that. Stack it this way. Put these things there. That's the wrong way to put things in the dishwasher. And you got to rinse that before you, right? I want you to share your emotions with me. And then you share your emotions. And what happens? No, don't share those. Right? You get punished in a way. Right? Often. It's not always the case, but often, right? Does it do women any good to be habitual complainers? Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Honestly, men should just stay out of women's kitchens. I always feel a little bit like an interloper because my wife has got 7 spinning plates and bubbling things and spices. And I came in after helping my daughter with the ducks today and went to wash my hands. She's not here. Like, and she's right. I mean, she's right in all of this, right? So this is why men tend to be pretty good artists, because we can't talk to people about our problems because we just get attacked. And it's not usually a really focused attack. It's usually not like direct. It's just like a recoiling. Like, oh, that sounds tough. You know, and you can feel the distance. And now you've got somebody, like now you have 2 problems where you formerly only had 1. You had the problem, whatever that problem was. Now you've got 2 problems because it's whatever upset you to begin with, and now you've got to manage somebody else reacting negatively to you complaining. Why does it benefit women? Because you know this, right? Anybody know why complaining benefits women? Why do women complain? Again, tons of exceptions, but why do women complain? Why? It's simple economics, right? Army of simps obey, they get resources, men will rush to solve her problems so they can mate with her, eggs, it works. Yeah, why do people do stuff? Because it works. Because it works. Complaining strips men of resources, and complaining gives women resources. Like, you guys know the tipping point, right? You know the tipping point? You know this, right? Where a woman goes from positive economics to negative economics? You aware of this? Do you know why the Karens are middle-aged or older? Why the Karens are 40, 45 plus? Do we know this? You know this, right? How do women get resources when they're young? By being pretty and available and so on, right? And that's positive economics. You give women resources to pursue a good. But then when women lose their sexual market value, they lose to some degree their sexual value, then they go from positive economics to negative economics. Negative economics are you're paying to avoid a negative rather than paying to achieve a positive. Right? So a young woman, let's say that she's got something negative that she wants to say to a man, a young woman will say that and the man will comply and conform because she's young and pretty. Whereas an older woman, a man would just roll his eyes because now she's in the mom category for him. So she can't get her way by being young and pretty. So she gets her way by being aggressive and obnoxious, right? All right, let me just get caught up with your comments here. There's great comments here. I think it works in the short run for women, but ultimately for many women, drives away good men and sours the relationship with friends and family. Well, sure, yeah, of course. I mean, look, I mean, we're talking about some. Like, some men are workaholics and some women complain all the time, but it's not everyone, obviously. Somebody says, a quote I heard today is that women view men as men view jobs, a means to an end, while men view women as women view money, the end goal in itself. No, they don't. Oh, come on. I'm sorry. I mean to laugh. That's not true. That's not it. Oh, that's just that's the self-pity brigade that men have. Well, you know, women just love men for the resources they provide, whereas I, as a noble man, I love women for women themselves. I don't love them for any benefit they could possibly give to me. Come on. There's not any adult who loves another adult for anything other than a benefit. Of course, but with benefits comes security. If you're married and you know that your wife is benefiting from your presence, then you continue to provide that benefit and you continue to stay married. That's security, right? That's security. Like if the restaurant you go has, you like to go, has great food at great prices and they continue to do that, they'll continue to get your business, right? So this idea that, well, you know, women only love men for the resources they provide, whereas men don't care about sexual access or anything like that. I mean, come on, we're not monks. We're not in some yogi position floating over the Vesuvius vulva volcano, just on the breath of our own higher beings. No, I mean, look, men love women for their virtue and their beauty and sexual access and children and motherhood. And I mean, yeah, for the benefits they provide. This idea that women's love is selfish, but men's love is selfless. It's like, have you never been a teenage boy? I just think that's kind of funny. It's not true. It's not true. Let's see here. Complaining at least gives them attention, something almost all women want. Fighting with their complaints rewards their complaining. No, see, look, when women are young, they will get resources and deference because of their physical attractiveness, and so they don't have to learn how to negotiate, how to reason, how to debate, how to provide good arguments and evidence to get their way. And then when they get older, they should, of course, ideally learn how to reason and debate and provide arguments and evidence and facts and sources to sway other people. And they could do that, and some of them do, but a lot of them then fall into this complaining thing. It's just a way of getting what you want without having to debate. Right? It's just a way of getting what you want without having to debate. And that's a very, very common thing. So It's not just a massive desire for attention, right? I mean, look, I love my wife, she's wonderful, and she doesn't have to fight to get my attention. She doesn't have to. I just enjoy chatting with her. I enjoy like all of these good things. So, a woman who's married, has got kids, is a grandmother, has got grandkids, extended family, and so on. She gets plenty of attention. So, women don't become Karens to get attention. A woman gets attention, right? What's up with dating inflation? Have you seen the videos of women saying they will only marry guys with $300,000 salaries? Right. Okay, well, let me ask you this. Hit me with a why if you're an atheist. Hit me with a why or agnostic. Hit me with a why if you're an atheist or an agnostic. And don't worry, I haven't forgotten about the rant. Not all Karens have kids and grandkids. But a lot of them do, right? A lot of them don't, for sure. Yeah. So you're an atheist. Okay. So let me ask you this. How does atheism deal with vanity? Let me ask you that. How does atheism deal with vanity? With Christianity, it's very, like, pride is a sin, vanity is a sin, and you must be humbled before God, before the moral law, and so on. So how does atheism handle the question of vanity? Because vanity is one of the fundamental fuels of social instability. Vanity leads to jealousy when you don't get what you believe you deserve, which leads to aggression and rage and hatred against those doing better than you, which leads to socialism and communism and the stripping of resources from the more successful. So you can't have a stable society if you don't deal with the issue of vanity. You can't have it. You can't have it. In fact, colonialism as a whole and the white man's burden was a massive example of the sin of vanity. Outcompete the vain, stoicism? No, it doesn't. It doesn't. So, if you can't deal with vanity, so vanity is when you believe that you that the world owes you more than you earn. Right? This fundamental definition of vanity, that the world owes you more than you earn. Right? I mean, I think I'm running the very best show in the entire world throughout all of history. It'll never be better. That's my belief. That's my commitment. So there should be billions of people watching these streams. Does the world owe me that? It does not. I can try to earn it. I can try to do the best show I can possible, provide the most valuable insights that I can in the most entertaining, engaging, and energetic way that I can. But the world owes me not one bloodshot Monday morning eyeball. Owes me nothing. The world owes me no donations. The world owes me no reading of my books. The world owes me no joining of my show. Nothing. The world owes me nothing. Well, let me ask you this. Is vanity an issue in your life? And if so, how do you deal with it? Yeah, the universe owes you nothing. People owe you nothing. Now, your parents owed you stuff when you were a kid. I get all of that. I sympathize with that. If you didn't get what you were owed as a kid, that's really tragic. But you got to deal with it and not expect the tax code to give to you what your parents did, which is more than you deserve and earn in a voluntary situation. So, yeah, the women who are like, I want a guy with $300,000. Okay, yeah. That's vanity, right? That's vanity. That's vanity. Christianity deals with that quite well. I'm not saying that Christianity is a belief system deals with that very well. Like, how dare you focus on the material? You want a godly man full of character because the $300,000 is going to take you to hell, not going to give you the disco stamp on the back of the hand to get you into heaven. Is there a UBB equivalent for holding back vanity? Yeah, see, vanity is corrosive to property rights, right? I saw a meme. Should I upload it? Can I? Let me see here. I can on this platform, so hang tight. Let me see here. Let me see here. Get down here. Go on down there. Have you seen this meme? It's a little kid with a little blonde-haired kid playing a guitar, crying in some manner. It was obviously some family photo gone wrong or something like that, but it's pretty tragic. Let me see if I find it. Oh, yes, I know where it is. I do know where it is. Let's see here. Open link. Yes. And I will save this. Crying kid. And I will share this with you as best I can. And it is pretty tragic. All right, let me just get here. All right, here we go. So this is a kid crying at the top of his lungs. And it says, when you're born $60,000 in debt because your parents thought everything they couldn't afford was a human right. Right, that's a very sort of real thing. I don't think let's see if I can put it on the other platforms. Can I? I don't think I can. I just don't think I can. No, I just can't. I just can't. So vanity is the opposite of property rights. Because vanity says that you're owed something, and of course, if you are owed $500, then you can go to small claims court and get the money, right? And some employer didn't pay you, and you've got the receipts, and you're owed $500, you can go and get that person to give you the $500, right? That's And so vanity says that the world owes you, and therefore you can use the state to go and collect it, right? Like reparations or welfare or health care or dental care or cheap rent, or like you just owed stuff. And so vanity is when you believe that it's justified to use force to collect an imaginary debt, a debt that is not, right? So, yeah, that's one of the great challenges of atheism, is it has no particular way to deal with vanity. Yeah, vanity is entitlement, right? I am not owed abs. I can work for them if I want. I'm not owed an income. I'm not owed views. I'm not owed donations, though you can donate right now, right here, freedomain.com/donate, if you would like to donate that way, if you're excited about the new Peaceful Parenting book. And I'll share the progress, of course, as I go. Can't we ignore the vain people? You can't. Well, you could if there was no government, right? If we lived in a stateless society, you could ignore the vain people, but you can't, because the vain people will run to the government to strip you of your income in order to pay their imaginary debt, right? So it's not a good thing. What's your take on the popularity of life coaches these days? Life coaches in general, I'm sure there's tons of exceptions, but life coaches generally are middle-aged women who failed at life, pretending that they know something about how to get what they want. So a life coach in general is, you're looking for a trick or a hack or a con or a scam to get things without actually having to work hard at them. Well, you've just got to be confident. Like, I was watching this video of this middle-aged woman. She was a young woman, a pretty woman, who's like, you better not settle. You better not settle. You know, you teach people how to treat you. You don't settle. You know, when you're on a date, your hand should not touch that car door. You don't settle for anything less. You're a princess. You're a queen. You're a diva. You deserve the best. And don't ever settle for anything less, right? So whenever you hear people talk about everything that is owed to them and nothing about what they owe to others, that's a life coach. A life coach is someone, usually it's a young attractive woman or a young attractive man, and what they do is they say, I'm going to coach you on how to get things for free, which they're getting because they're pretty, and they imagine it's due to some trick, you just got to be confident, right? It's like, what do you mean you just have to be confident? I mean, you just have to be confident. It's just really, really a funny thing to see, right? You're confident because you're pretty, and people are constantly throwing, men in general, are constantly throwing resources at you. So you're pretty, and therefore you get a bunch of stuff. And so you think you have some psychological factor that is getting you all of this free stuff. So the woman who was giving the advice, like, don't settle, it's like, well, she's very pretty. I mean, if you're not pretty, if you're overweight, if you've got weird hair, if, like, whatever it is, right? Like, whatever's, you know, not attractive, and we all have that to some degree or another. So you don't get stuff for free. And it's not confidence, right? You're confident because you're pretty, and you get resources because you're pretty, and that drives your confidence. And then they think that they can transfer that confidence to other people, and other people would get the same resources as if they're pretty. So, yeah, it is. How vain are the public school teachers demanding more pay for brainwashing kids? Yeah. Most life coaches are pretending that they can digest your food, right? Because it's something internal to their life that they think they can transfer to other people. You know, the pretty woman saying to the ugly woman, just be confident. You know, you just have to sit at a cafe and men will just come and ask for your number. And she says this to some, I don't know, obese 60-year-old woman, and it's like deluded. But that's the vanity, right? That's the vanity aspect. Is she thinks that men, it's just the quality of her personality, it's her confidence, it's something she's earned herself. And yes, I'm sure that she exercises, I'm sure she eats well in order to maintain her figure and all of that, for sure. But the reason why she's doing that is because there's such a payoff. So, yeah, atheism does not have, which is one of the reasons why socialists and communists push atheism, because atheism doesn't, like, cripples the solution to vanity called humility, which is a great virtue in the Christian theology. And so when you kill the virtue of humility, then you inflate vanity, entitlement, greed, and the associated aggression that's the foundation of stealing from the more competent that characterizes socialism and communism. So yeah, they push atheism because atheism uncorks the demon of vanity, and that uncorks the demon of violence. So, all right, so yes. Men can't complain. Women can complain, even about relationships they vetted, test drove for years, chose to get married. Women can still complain about it, and people, if they leave, people say, well, good for you. Don't settle. Don't settle. You deserve better. You deserve a relationship that makes you feel wonderful all the time. Like that exists, right? You deserve perpetual cocaine. So, well, no, I mean, women should not complain. Well, again, in general, women complain because it works. And in general, they complain. And this is one of the reasons why, I don't know if you guys know this, but when the suffragette movement was trying to get women the vote, only 3% of women wanted the vote. Because they said it will turn us into nags and complainants and give us too much power in the political sphere and will destroy the family. Funny thing that. Somebody says, what's the best way to get a mentor in your 20s? The best way to get a mentor in your 20s is to be incredibly coachable and maximize your potential. So a mentor wants whoever they are mentoring to be fantastic. So be incredibly coachable, seek out feedback, welcome the feedback, improve crazily, and you will draw mentors to you. Yes, freedomain.locals.com. You can subscribe there. You can use the promo code all caps 20, UPB 2022, and you can get a free month. All right, so women who got to vet and choose a relationship, if they want to leave that relationship, just because they're just dissatisfied, everyone cheers them on, right? Adult victims of relentless child abuse who want to leave the parental relationship are castigated as horrendous, terrible people wrecking the entire family structure. They're selfish. They're entitled. They are hard, cold, unforgiving, mean, shallow, vicious bastards, right? Now, of course, hands up if you chose your parents. Hands up. I can do finger up if you chose your parents, right? Hands up if you chose your parents. Oh, you can't raise your hands? Of course you didn't. Like, women will leave a man they chose and got, they chose out of 20 or plus guys, right? Women will leave a man they chose and got to test drive, and everyone says, you girl, stunning, brave, heroic, blah, blah, blah. Adult children of relentless child abusers, if they say, peace out, man, I'm tapping out. I don't want this relationship. I can't get anything positive out of the relationship. I never chose this relationship, and it was inflicted upon me when I was dependent and helpless for decades. And they continue to be abusive and mean and nasty, right? What happens, right? What happens when somebody wants out of an abusive relationship they were helpless for decades and never chose? Right? This is how unbelievably little respect we have for children. It's literally like saying, well, if you chose a man, you're heroic for leaving a man you chose just because you're dissatisfied. But if you were married off at the age of 5 by abusive parents to an abusive man, you better stay. You have to stay. You owe that man. You wouldn't want to break up a family, would you? It's like, I didn't choose him. I was just married off by my parents. But you obligated. Right? This is how incredibly vicious. Yeah, people say to the adult children who want out of abusive family relationships, how cold and cold-hearted. How cruel and cold-hearted. Have you joined a cult? Right. Facebook moms group are full of women encouraging other moms to get a divorce anytime they have marital complaints. Yes. That is true. I'm going to read you a little bit here. This is a very well-known phenomenon. A very well-known phenomenon. The transmissibility of divorces, they spread. I remember when I was about 9, becoming quite fascinated by my parents' relationship and trying to eavesdrop on them whenever I could. They were cautiously reserved, and I could usually only hear murmurs through the ventilation. I suppose they were always concerned that someone would hijack their phones and listen in. But I did hear them talking once at the foot of the garden when I pretended to nap on a lounge chair, but was surreptitiously cupping my ear to hear the words that strangely echoed off a stone statue. 20 years, I feel I barely know you, said my mother. Her tone was aggrieved, as it so often was. That morning she turned on a blender, but it had sparked and died in her hands, and she had lifted off the counter as if to hurl it before dropping it and crying out to no one that nothing worked. My father had just grunted. You gotta stop talking to Joan. This isn't about Joan. Of course it is. Divorce is spread like the flu, you know that. You've gotta cut her off like a tourniquet or we'll both bleed out. I could see her biting her thumbnail in the shaded green distance. But they were together so long, longer than us. My father shrugged. People die younger than us. We're still breathing. Stop measuring yourself by others. She looked at him savagely. Oh, hell, you're one to talk. All you do is measure your dick against everyone else. Maybe, but you don't seem to mind the beautiful house and dresses it buys. It always comes down to money. My father extended his hand. Hello, you might remember me from our first date when I told you how ambitious I was. Isn't it enough now, though? Not according to your visa bill. They were circling each other like wounded sharks, snapping for a kill shot. Joan got the virus, my father said. He imitated a woman, I don't know who. You're just a broodmare, cooking and cleaning and wiping asses. Why do you let your husband take all the glory and run the world? Get out there, girl. You go and be brave and stunning. Show the world what you're made of. Take the bull by the horns. Go be a girl boss, you empowered woman about to find her voice. My mother laughed, despite herself. I married an ape, agreed. And you're going to stay married. And you're going to drop Joan, because drowning people just pull you down. Divorced people hate seeing happy marriages. Are we happy, though? My father's face crumpled as he scowled, and I realized how rarely I saw him in full sunlight. That's the kind of open-ended crap question that turns concrete into quicksand. Before you talk to Joan this morning, were you unhappy? Be honest, he warned. She paused. I wasn't unhappy. Good enough. Not being unhappy is like not being in pain. We don't get euphoria all day long. But she puts this worm into your ear. His voice dropped low and conspiratorial. That maybe you are unhappy, and maybe your husband is selfish. Oh, perish the thought! And maybe there is some undefined something more out there. And maybe you think that being 5'10" is tall, but there are people out there who are 50 feet tall, so you're really short after all. Oh, come on. You had me until... My mother waved her hand. Maybe. 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 That's just acid conjecture, like the we are in a simulation lunatics. Here are the facts. Joan is a plain woman in her 50s who's going to find out that the wonderful world she is setting out to join is just a refugee ship of broken people with broken lives. And she doesn't have the sexual power she had in her 20s. And she's going to end up burying her regrets in cat litter. And all the money she thinks she's going to get from Bill, well, that's just going to go to lawyers. And 2 houses and 18 vacations. It's pathetic. And I hate her with all my heart for sowing this stupidity in the minds of her friends. She screwed up. She got greedy. She overreached. And now she's fallen out of the cruise ship. And we cannot circle back to find her. My mother gnawed at her thumb. She's so sad. She needs someone. She had someone. She had Bill and a decent marriage. But someone put the worm in her ear. And now she's trying to put the worm in your ear. Don't. Let her. Don't do it. It's a hole with no bottom. You know it. So I'm supposed to just abandon her in her hour of need? My father shrugged angrily. She abandoned Bill. She's got nothing to complain about. They moved on, and their voices no longer slid round the semicircle of the stone statue's outstretched hands to my cupped ears. I'd heard enough. Women had to be wrangled. Their sympathies were their weakness. Or, as my father once told me, women will always find someone or something to mother. If they don't have kids, it's cats or immigrants. I sometimes wished that the whole world was women when I was running for office. So that's from my novel called The Future that I hope you will check out. Have you been banned from Meta Threads yet? Well, I'm not going to there. Are you kidding me? So, yes, let me just get... I will get you the link to The Future. If you have not listened to this audiobook or read it, you know, I started out as a novelist. So here you go. Yeah, it's a fantastic book. A really, really fantastic book. Wild. It's the most imaginative thing I've ever written because I was completely unconstrained. If you just want to get the... the audiobook, you can get that. The feed is right there. rss.com/podcast/the future. I hope you will check it out. It's free, and it's really fantastic, and it's really a lot about peaceful parenting. So, yeah, women... women complain, the world bends. Men complain, the world shrugs. Children complain, the world ignores. But the funny thing is that, and this is the camouflage, right, that the world constantly says that, oh, all we care about is the future we live. Well, all we care about is the children. We live for the children. We're all about the children, the children, the children, right? And then, I mean, can you imagine? Imagine this speech. Imagine I was running for office. Sorry. I got a satanic ice finger up the butt body chill. I mean, he doesn't even wear the fur gloves we're supposed to, and my safe word is vlohoshtibotlakot. So imagine this speech, right? You're running for office, right? All right, people. I'm going to tell you some hard truths, and I'm going to ask you to live by your values. I'm not going to ask you to live by my values or some values you don't already believe in. I'm going to ask you to live by your values, to have integrity for what you claim to be moral. Now, are children important? Hands up if you think children are important to our society. Are our children the future? Do we care about our children? Would we make sacrifices for our children? If you're tired and your baby is crying, moms or dads, do you get up and go to your child? Yes. If your child has a toothache, do you take your child to the dentist, even if it's expensive and inconvenient? Do you do for family? Do you sacrifice for your children? Of course we do. Of course we do. In most realms, except one that's quite important. So, and you as a crowd, you're listening to me as I run for office, make the speech. How much debt are our children born into at the moment? How much debt, how much unfunded liabilities are our children born into at the moment? Just out of curiosity. What are we burdening them with just for the purpose of drawing breath? Yeah, it's about $1 million if you count the unfunded liabilities. So we are... Now, $1 million is in fact what the average person makes over the course of his or her lifetime, $1 million. So we have sold our children's entire working lives into debt slavery to totalitarian foreign banksters for our own greed. You know it. I know it. When you wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and you're truly honest with yourself, when you're shaving and look deep into your eyes, you know that we have done about as great a wrong to our children as has been done since the Aztecs used to slam them down on stone slabs and rip their hearts out with flint knives. We have done unbelievable economic enslavement horrors inflicted them upon our children. Is it their fault? No, it is not their fault. Of course, their children. So, my fellow citizens, it is time for us to right this wrong. No more lies, no more evasion, no more nonsense, no more avoidance, simple, basic integrity. So I'm standing here before you saying you are going to have to give up a lot because you took a lot from the unborn. The unborn, which we claim to love so much, and the children are our future, and I believe that the children and everything we should sacrifice for the children have been turned into blank collateral to buy our votes from corrupt, lying politicians. We are enslaved to our greed, and therefore we have enslaved the most innocent among us to a lifetime of drudgery and indentured servitude. So we have to stop this. It's not the children's fault. It's our fault. So we're going to have to put in savage means testing for Social Security. We're going to have to enormously cut government spending on health care. We are going to have to cut the welfare state enormously. We are going to have to cut entitlements like you wouldn't believe. We're going to have to close military bases overseas. And we're going to have to right this wrong, people. We have to right this wrong. Every second of the day that we continue in this wrong, we are further defaming any honor of our existence in the hearts and minds of our children. And if you think that this is somehow impossible or impractical, I would remind you that Hannibal got elephants over the Alps. What we want to do, we can do. Where there is a will, there is a way. But we have to shake off this delusion that we are anything other than evil, corrupt, vicious, vile, and ignoble for burdening our children with our own greed. I mean, if somebody was to sell his child into slavery, we would call that person deeply immoral and would jail him for decades. How is it different? How is it different? We're still selling our children into slavery, and we must stop. For their sake, and for the sake of having any honor, decency, or integrity in our own lives. Because those children, if they grow up and they realize what we have done to them in the name of democracy, but really in the name of a really demonic form of greed and exploitation. And I don't even know where the Marxists claim, the socialists claim that they stand for the rights of the exploited. And who is possibly more exploited than an innocent child born into $1 million of debt because of our greed? And the socialists don't stand for that. They don't say the first thing we have to do is get rid of the national debt, because the exploited workers called the children are the most exploited and most preyed upon throughout all of human history. We claim to revile slavery, as we should, but slavery is baked into our entire economic and political system. And you know, you've done wrong. You know that you've been greedy. You know this is a wrong that has to be righted. And you've been waiting your entire life for someone to come along and say, you have done a great evil, and you must now make amends. And you say, well, but we can't cut the spending. We can't cut the spending because people need that money. I don't know, do your children need to not be slaves? Do your children need to not spend their entire lives being ripped off for predatory banksters? No. If you say, we can't afford it, how on earth can our children afford it? Have we utterly forgotten what it is to make any sacrifices for our children as a society? Well, I've got to have my free health care. It's not free. It's fashioned from the blood of your children's futures. Well, I've got to have my old age pension. I paid into it. No, you didn't. Because you voted to take more out of the system than you paid into it. It's like me lending money to a mafia guy. I lend $50,000 to a mafia guy. I give $50,000 to a mafia guy so that he gives me $100,000 back. I get $100,000, I blow it, and then I say, well, wait a minute, this mafia guy owes me $50,000 because I gave him $50,000. It's like, yes, but you also took $100,000. You've done a great wrong. You know this reckoning is coming. It either comes peacefully or not. Because if you expect your children to grow up and want to take care of you once they find out how viciously you've exploited them for the sake of your own greed, I don't even know what to tell you. I mean, and the women among you, my gosh. The women among you. Do you know what you constantly, what my email, my inbox, is, I'm constantly confronted with is the women saying, well, you know, we're underpaid relative to men. And without getting into the debate, the argument, let's just take it at face value. Let's just take it at face value and say, ah, yes, well, you know, men do make more money than you. Right. So you feel that you are underpaid. You feel like you should be paid more. So I ask you, if I were to suddenly inflict a debt of $1 million on you to pay men, how would you feel? Would you feel that that would be unjust? Instead of making 80 cents on the dollar or 75 cents on the dollar, you were now $1 million in debt. Would you feel that that would be unjust? But you're doing that to your children. You find being underpaid by 20 or 25% to be an outrageous wrong in society. Yet none of you seem to blink or even notice the $1 million of debt inflicted on your children. Ah, well, you know, we got to keep our children safe. So we'll take them to get health care and dental care. We've got to get our children educated. For what? So they can work as a slave? Because of your greed? The more of your democratic infinite hunger. Slaves. Literal slaves. Kept more of their productivity, more of their income than your children will. Slaves kept 70 to 80% of their income. It was wrong, completely evil. They didn't have a free market. But the slave got to keep 70 to 80 cents out of every dollar he produced. How much are your children going to keep when you have indebted them 100% of their entire life's income? Now, if I were to propose that as a speech, what would happen? If I actually asked people to make sacrifices and live by the credo that the children are important and justice should be served and exploitation is immoral, what would happen? Even Democrats couldn't. Yeah. Well, you would, people would never listen. I mean, they would rather talk about being virtuous than actually be virtuous, right? They wouldn't listen. This is how exploited children are. So children need adults to speak for them. God help any adult who genuinely speaks for the children. I mean, that's what I was first attacked for, was speaking for the children, the adult children, saying, you don't have to be in abusive relationships. Do you have to be in abusive relationships? No, it's unhealthy. Okay, let's make that a universal. Ooh, cult leader. Right. Anyway. Everyone would be confused as to how the debt could possibly be repaid. Well, the way, I mean, this was the Trump argument, right? I don't know if you know the Trump argument. Hit me with the why if you know the Trump argument for the economy. Like why some people supported Trump. Do you know? The argument was that you couldn't possibly pay off the unfunded obligations, and so the best thing you could do was reduce red tape, reduce regulations, free up the market so that the economic productivity would be able to drive enough tax revenue to start begin to paying off the unfunded liabilities and the entitlement programs. Like that was the idea. That and Trump was, you know, doing good things to minimize regulations and red tape in the economy. We could pay everything off, but you'd need a really free market. You could pay everything off. You could pay off all the unfunded liabilities. You could do all of that But you need a really free market. Yeah, it absolutely could have worked. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, everything. Everything could be handled. I mean, the free market, like a genuine free market, often grows at 8 to 10% a year. Which means the economy doubles every, what, 6 years or so? So the goal was get Trump in, get the free market, get the productivity of the free market so that people could get off welfare, so that having a job paid more than welfare, and you could find ways to take the increased tax revenue out of the increased economic activity and use it to pay down the debt. It was the last chance for the soft landing, right? This is why post-Trump I'm out of politics, because there's no soft landing anymore, right? There's no soft landing anymore. I mean, the welfare state, you know this, right? The welfare state ended the escape from poverty, right? So post-Second World War in the American economy, and this is even more true for blacks than for whites, there was a reduction in the poverty rate by 1% every year. And poverty was very close to being wiped out as an involuntary state. Like some people choose to be poor, they want to write a great book or whatever, or just don't want to work. So poverty was within maybe 10 years or so of being eliminated. And that's so they had to put the welfare state in, because that way they can keep their dependents, right? Would you be shocked if Trump wins again? Yes, I would be. I would be. Didn't the market in Germany in the 1920s recover really quickly due to... Yeah, so I don't know if you knew this, but the economic crash in Germany, there was a recession, depression really, 1920, 1921. And there was a sharper economic downturn in Germany in 1920, 21 than there was in 1929 during the famous stock market crash. And they had a laissez-faire finance minister who did nothing, and 12 to 18 months later the economy had completely recovered. You didn't end up with the 14-year death march, the Bataan death march of economic degradation in Germany, as you had from 1929 to in America into the 1940s. And so you had at least 13 years, by some counts 14 years of economic hell, because of all of the socialist programs put in over the course of the Great Depression that entrenched and expanded. And of course, it takes, once you get these things in, it usually takes a war to dislodge them, and it's pretty horrendous. So, unfunded liabilities are over 200 trillion. Yeah, I remember Lawrence, what's his name, the economist. I remember many years ago it was 180 trillion. And so, yeah, unfunded liabilities are over 200 trillion. because, you know, 220 trillion would be insane. Yeah, it's all become monopoly money nonsense, right? And as you know, I think for a lot of people, the idea that Trump was going to liberate the economy from its restrictions and grow it to the point where we could get people have the soft getting off the welfare state, getting off food stamps, and he did. I mean, under Trump, welfare rolls went down, food stamp rolls went down, and there was this idea, right? All right. So questions, comments, issues, I'm happy to take whatever is on your mind and wrangle it through the big chatty forehead. I'll give you guys a moment. Is demographics largely the reason why Trump will lose? Yeah, I mean, was it Texas is now majority Hispanic and so on, and Hispanics tend to vote for Democrats and so on, right? So. Trump just forgot about his base, right? I mean, he was kind of lured off his base. Anyway, I have no particular interest in politics, and I wouldn't even say that I'm keeping up on it that much. Old boomers got scared about Corona and voted against Trump. Yeah, you know, that's a tough situation. I mean, that's a tough situation for any politician, right? Because there was a lot of residual credibility in the alphabet agencies to do with health. There was a lot of residual legitimacy from the, you know, past times that they'd had sort of health issues and so on. And it would be pretty tough to say, to know how far they went off the rails with regards to the COVID stuff. It would be very hard to make that case. And of course, the media gets a lot of its money in America. I think it's America and New Zealand are the only countries that allow direct-to-consumer advertising from pharmaceutical companies. So the media gets good chunks of its money, in many cases, most of its money from pharma ads. And so anybody who criticized the vaccines had to be removed from public view so that people could get made good their money. Was it in New York? They were spending, in some cases, they were spending over $14,000 per COVID shot. Did you like the 2021 Dune movie? God, I hate Dune. I really hate Dune. I tried reading it twice as a kid, and I just thought it was terrible, weird, mystical, gross, disgusting. And I remember, I did sit through Kyle MacLachlan and Sting and God knows what in the Dune movie from the, was it 80s, 90s maybe. And I just thought it was appalling trash. Patrick Stewart was in that too with his old up front party in the back hairdo. I find it's just mystical and the giant worms and guys with pustules all over their faces. The spice must flow. Oh, that was the David Lynch version. Yeah, it was terrible. Great soundtrack? Yeah, I don't know. Just watched the last video Lauren Southern posted. Still picking up my jaw from the floor, wondering if you two kept in touch and discussed her familial issues. Yeah, I really can't speak to that, I'm afraid. I would probably say too much, and it might get unpleasant. So, all right. How does a person who's been introduced to philosophy late in life and did not have the knowledge of prevention recover and turn his or her life around, like divorce and children? How does a person introduced late in life? Well, I mean, you take ownership. What do you mean introduced to philosophy late in life? You'll have to tell me a little bit more about what you mean. Did not have the knowledge of prevention recover and turn his or her life around, like divorce or children. Well, why did you get divorced? Did you raise your children badly? Did you yell at them? Did you call them names? Did you hit them? You didn't need philosophy to question that, right? Did you read books on like when you were getting married? You know, everybody knows who's over the age of three. Everybody knows that there's a significant risk of divorce when you get married, right? Hit me with a why if you know that there's a risk of divorce and it can be very bad for men and children, right? And women, of course, too, right? Hit me with a why. You know. Everybody knows, right? Everybody knows. So, yeah, everybody knows this. So when you're getting married, you talk about values, you talk about decisions, you talk about commitment, you talk about your vows, how seriously you're going to take them, what happens if we disagree, how do we resolve conflicts, how do we resolve disputes, do you want kids? Where do you want to live? What kind of job do you have? Do you want to stay home? So the 50% stat is a lie. It's an absolute, complete, and total lie. I just talked about this, so I'll just touch on it briefly. What percentage of first marriages go all the way to death? What percentage of first marriages go all the way till one or both parties die? That's right, 70%. 70%. So the 50% of marriages end in divorce are all the assholes who on the revolving door of the divorce court, just round and round and round, getting divorced 2, 3, 4, 5 times, right? I talked to a couple, they had 7 divorces among their parents, they had 7 divorces. So, yeah, I ask you, because my concern is that you're saying, well, all of the mistakes in my life were because I just didn't happen to know philosophy. Whereas I don't think that's true at all. Like, I've never talked to somebody who's been harsh to their children who's ever read a parenting book. Just read a book on parenting. There's tons of parenting books out there. None of them say beat your children. I mean, maybe a few really fundamentalist ones. So, I would be concerned if you say, because you're kind of giving yourself the excuse and you're saying, well, you know, I didn't have the information. How do you know you didn't? I don't know if you didn't have the information. I don't know. Maybe you didn't, but aren't you responsible for not doing research on how to have a good marriage? I think you should be. You should be responsible for that, shouldn't you? People, why you no tip tonight? Why you no tip tonight? Did you spend all your money at the bar? Hookers and blow? They did find... Didn't they find cocaine at the White House? Doesn't that mean that some policemen can go and get asset forfeiture of the White House? Oh, it's funny. Oh, just for me. All right. Tip for you, sir. Thank you so much. Christian. I'm going to give you the Christian, the French name. I brought a homeschooling and parenting books with a family member. Clean conscience. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. That's for Saturday night. Saturday night. Where's that from? Listen to the rhythm of the rock and roll on Saturday night. Saturday night. Oh, 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 oh. Yeah, Bay City Rollers, yeah. Didn't one of them end up in the pedo adjacent category? Something like that. Yeah, it was yeah, it was wild. I was trying to explain to my daughter why the Beatles didn't tour. I was playing her a couple of Beatles songs, and she's like, yeah, it's a good band, right? Did they play live? I said, well, they started, and then they had to give up. And she's like, well, why? Didn't they like it? Weren't they any good? I was like, no, they were fantastic, but they had to give up. Everybody know, you know why the Beatles stopped touring, right? Why did the Beatles stop touring? You know? I guess they did that one concert on the roof, right, of Abbey Road. Yes, they couldn't hear their own music. They couldn't even hear their own music. They couldn't hear their own singing because the girls and the women were screaming at the top of their lungs. What the living FK is that? I find this incomprehensible. Can anybody, please, I'm begging you, can anybody explain to me why women scream at this? Why do women scream? Have ever heard Once Upon a Time in the West, Dire Straits? I'm a huge Dire Straits fan, by the way. Not a big fan of Salt and the Swing. I find that song a bit greasy, but Private Investigations and Industrial Disease and boy, you know, for a guy who can't really sing, man, what a career he's had and what a fantastic musician Mark Knopfler is. Yeah, why do women scream at bands? I find this incomprehensible. Okay, crying, I don't know, whatever, right? But Frank Zappa was good. I just remember Frank Zappa had a very funny, I don't even know where it was from. He was playing somewhere and he's like, well, I was in the elevator the other day and in walks a fella, Mr. Sting. And I'm talking to him and I'm saying, Mr. Sting, I really quite like your song, Murder by Numbers. Maybe we could do it together, Mr. Sting. I just think the way he said Mr. Sting was kind of funny. Yeah, Frank Zappa was good. A smart guy, but I was never a big fan of his music. It's too acid jazzy for me. Steph, any women scream when you do karaoke? I remember doing karaoke once by the beach. I was doing karaoke by the beach, and I do a pretty good version of Stevie Wonder's Superstition. I do a pretty good version. When you believe in things that you don't understand, you will suffer superstition in the way. I do a pretty good version of Superstition. And I remember there was this a group of young men and women. They all happened to be black, and they lined up. And, you know, it's got a fantastic beat, that song. But down, 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 down. Anyway, it's got a great beat. I love that song for the beat. And they just all began dancing at the same time, and the entire crowd joined in. And I literally got an entire crowd dancing going by the beach doing karaoke one night. It was fantastic. Fantastic. Have I done karaoke with Alex Jones? I have not, in fact, done karaoke with Alex Jones. Yeah, Superstition is a great song. It's one of my favorite songs because it is actually kind of philosophical in its own way. Trying to get the band's attention followed by female conformity. They are the most attractive guys that have been around, so they can't help it. They have to shoot their shot. Oh, God, I remember, this is really obscure music time. What's the big hit from the Tubes? What's the big hit from the band The Tubes? They were a bit of a one-hit wonder. Just out of question. Oh, there's some, you don't know? Anybody know? The Tubes. One in a million girls. Yes, that's right. Why would I lie? Why would I lie? Yes. So, Mike Knopfler did a solo album, Sailing to Philadelphia, that I've never listened to. So I remember a friend of mine, for some reason, he had this real fetish for the band The Tubes. And he's like, I don't really like their music hugely, but man, they're fantastic in concert. And I remember I wouldn't say he dragged me, but he went to drag me to a concert of The Tubes. And I was right down in the front. And, it was all right. It was all right. It was okay. And there was a band there ahead of time who did the Money Honey. And they were just really, anti-charisma, right? They were just obnoxious because they were so so cocky and yet... I hate cocky bands, the bands who are just like the vanity. I like the bands that really work hard to engage the audience. Like the vanity bands are just great. Look at me, I'm playing and singing. I remember being in this the audience and trying to catch the eye of the sexy backup singer. I think One in a Million Girls, or She's a Beauty, I think is the name of the song. It's great, great powerhouse vocals and all of that, so... Yeah. You can talk to a million girls. All right. Steph, do you like Yes, Owner of a Lonely Heart? I've listened to it relentlessly at deafening volume recently. Don't do that, man. Don't fuck up your ears. Really, I'm serious. Don't screw up your ears, man. Do not do it. Do not get tinnitus. Do not wreck your ears. Do not listen at deafening volume. Absolutely do not. Watch your ears. I tell you, I take earplugs to see movies these days. I am a massive fan of Yes. I've seen them 3 times in concert. John Anderson is a very dull performer, but one of the most gifted vocalists I've ever put ear to. And so I got into Yes. Strangely enough, there was a big song that called Friends of Mr. Cairo, a very imaginative and creative song. And it's a beautiful song, especially the second half, the softer part. And I got into that album. It was a good album, Friends of Mr. Cairo. From there, I'm like, oh, this guy's got, he was the vocalist for this band, Yes, which I'd never really heard of. This is long before Owner of a Lonely Heart. And I remember here's the thing. Back in the day, man, you all don't know the suffering that we had back in the day when it came to music. Because back in the day, there is a cure apparently coming out for tinnitus. Just look it up. I can't advocate anything. I'm just telling you that I've heard that there's a cure. They retrain your auditory nerve and so on. So there appears to be a cure coming out for tinnitus. So, you do some research and obviously talk to your doctor and all of that. But yeah, I have tinnitus in 1 year from cancer treatments. So back in the day, hit me with a why if this scenario is anything you're familiar with. So back in the day, if you wanted to get into a band, when I wanted to get into Yes, they had 6 or 7 albums, right? And you don't know which one to get. So what you do is you buy the greatest hits, and then you know you're going to get the highest quality stuff, right? So you're going to buy the greatest hits album. And then what's the problem? What's the problem when you buy the greatest hits album, and back in the day when it was like LPs and or maybe even CDs, what was the problem then? Then what? What happens then? What do you toast for? Yeah, I got the radio versions. No, that's not it. They leave one key song off the greatest hits album. Nope. They don't tell you which album they come from. Nope. They usually will say that. You never hear their other stuff. So what happens is, well, the other albums, then you're paying for songs you already have, right? So if you get a greatest hits album, which is 2 songs off every other album, say the 14 songs on the album, we got 7 other albums, then when you buy the other albums, you're already buying 2 songs you already have, and they're probably the best songs on the album, so you're just buying the leftovers. Ah, it was horrible. And Yes... Yes and The Tragically Hip are 2 bands where the great songs are great and the terrible songs are terrible. I mean, I was a big fan of 90210 or 90 whatever the album was. And then they came over with an album called The Big Generator, and I listened to it. I bought it on CD. I listened to it once and I was like, oh God, that's terrible. Usually the first band album of any band is the best. Is that true? I thought Queen 1 was pretty bad. Queen 2, the second side, March of the Black Queen is a fantastic song. That whole side was pretty good. But I don't know. I mean, early Pink Floyd is like monstrous. Like early Pink Floyd is like being beaten up by auditory experiments. It is pretty wild. I always forget the name of this song. But I will tell it. If you want to, I played this for my daughter the other day. You can look up for this song. It's called Several Species of Small Furry Animals Gathered Together in a Cave, Grooving with a Pict. I will say this again. Several species of small furry animals gathered together in a cave and grooving with a Pict. You should, it's from Umaguma. You should listen to that and see. ELO song is amazing. I mean, ELO is a great band. Yeah, they were a great band. I was walking in the darkness in the middle of the night. Mm-hmm. You've been listening to Tears for Fears lately? I like Tears for Fears. Good band. Very skilled band. Great vocalists. And Bad Man's Song. The Olita Adams stuff they did was just fantastic. Just great. Great stuff. And I really like them. I don't know whatever happened to them. I think Curtis Smith showed up once or twice in Psych, and I never heard from him again. Most greatest hits albums miss because there's no theme. Every Simon and Garfunkel album had a distinct personality. The greatest hits obviously didn't. It left me feeling nothing. No. Should we just talk music for the rest of the night? I literally could, because I'm a massive music person as a whole. Early Yes is very good. Men at Work? Yeah, it was an uneven album, right? The Men at Work, the big album with Who Can It Be Now, and Be Good, Be Good. Be Good is a good song. Be Good, Be Good, Be Good, Be Good, Be Good. They did that on Super Nanny. They used that as the theme for Super Nanny, which was actually pretty good. Colin James Hay, Wayfarer's Son. He did a solo album that was pretty good. Listen to Hildegard von Bingen's Gregorian Chant. I went through a massive medieval phase when I was in my late teens, early 20s. Basically, all I listened to was Gregorian chants and medieval music, and there were these groups that had actually recreated the instruments using the exact source materials, the exact ingredients. I'm sorry, I'm not able to think of the right word for some reason. But they made the instruments with the exact stuff that the original instruments were made from. Do you like prog rock Genesis? Early Genesis I was not a big fan of. Selling England by the Pound. I'm afraid I got into Genesis a lot more around the Abacab days. Abacab is a fantastic album. And do anybody know where the Abacab comes from? The name of the song and the name of the album? Does anybody know where Abacab comes from? It's pretty wild. I didn't know this until after I bought the album. The notes in the melody? No. It's the rhyming scheme. A-B-A-C-A-B. Abacab is the rhyming scheme. And Driving the Last Bike, I used to listen to that song when I would be hiking early in the morning. I used to put that on, and it's not too bad, semi-loud. And Driving the Last Bike was a fantastic song. And what a belter Phil Collins was in his prime. They ran into ABBA in a cab. That's funny. Billy Squire, I was not a huge Billy Squire fan. Love is a hero. Soldiers forever. So Freddie Mercury did an intro. I think Love is a Hero or something like that. He did an intro that just blows the socks off. Vocal performances of Freddie Mercury are incredible. And he did an intro to Love is a Hero by Billy Squire, which was just incredible. Roxette had some catchy pop tunes. Yes, She's Got the Look. Roxette was great. What in the world could make a brown-eyed boy turn blue, or something like that. Yeah, Roxette's had some great, crazy, catchy pop tunes. She said, "Hello, you fool, I love you. Come on, join the joyride." That was that Roxette? I think that was. I just heard that the other day when I went ice skating with my daughter. Let's see here. Do you like Iron Maiden? No, a bit too pokey on my nipples. I've never been a huge Iron Maiden fan. I never quite got into that. I would say AC/DC was as hard as I got, and some early Zeppelin. Have you ever listened to the musical instrument, the hurdy-gurdy? Yes, I have, and I love it. Actually, Simon and Garfunkel did a Gregorian song way back in the day, very early. Yeah, Joyride was a Roxette hit, and boy, that woman had a set of pipes, eh? That Roxette just, she's got the look. She's just had an amazing set of pipes. And again, you sort of wonder whatever happened to these artists and so on. Oh, gosh, what did I hear the other day? Oh, yes, Adam Ant. Okay, two songs that Adam Ant was famous for. This is 80s Central, man. Who were the two songs that Adam Ant was famous for? Goody Two Shoes? Yes, that's right. That's right. Anything else? Just know the one. The devil take your stereo and your record collection. Stand and deliver. Wasn't that the other one? God, that guy was good looking, eh? Like at that perfect elfin, no beard face look. So yes, Stand and Deliver, fantastic. And do you know where the Adam Ant, right? And this is another, you know, silly thing that I didn't notice until later, is that Adam Ant is just adamant. He's really adamant. He's really, you know, adamant. I just, Adam Ant, it's kind of funny, right? Do you have good headphones for music listening? Awesome and economical audio, Technica ATH MX, M50X. And a good solid DAC like the Missa Origen 2. Are you having a stroke or is that even English at this point? Okay, I copied and pasted it. But yeah, because I have a half a dud ear, I have really have to have good headphones. So I'm the only one in the family who will sit and listen to music. I just love it. It gives me all the feels. It gives me all the feels. As far as modern artists go, my daughter is really into some of the, believe it or not, video game lore music is huge. Yeah, Olivia Rodriguez, she likes, and I think she's JT Music, she likes as well. Now, is he in the middle of doing something else? My three favorite guitarists, I think that would be David Gilmour, comma, David, and some guy who goes by the initials DG. I think that would be it. So my three favorite guitarists. Okay, so if you want like guitar that is hypnotically fantastic, listen to Pulse by Pink Floyd. It's a live album coming back to life. The first minute and a half of that is just like seriously incredible. So three favorite guitarists. Prince, if you want to hear a guitar solo that will blow your socks off, you go to the Harrison Tribute Concert where they did While My Guitar Gently Weeps. Prince is just hypnotically fantastic. And I think, I mean, I hate to say Clapton because it's a bit, but Clapton, his guest stuff is fantastic. So there's a song by Sting called It's Probably Me, which is one of the few songs that a baritone can sing of Sting's. And Clapton shows up on that. He's fantastic in there. And Phil Collins, Wish It Would Rain Down. Clapton has some guitar stuff on that that's also fantastic as a whole. So, music is one of the few things in life that truly moves me, from making me feel so happy to a sobbing wreck. The highs and lows are like a roller coaster. Everything else in my life feels so flat in comparison. Yeah. I remember a song that used to make me quite sad and emotional was a song called Wonderland by Paul Young. Somebody says Iron Maiden, although mostly known for the metal, also got some great slower songs. Empire of the Kuds and most of their newer album Book of Souls is fantastic. I would recommend Empire of the Clouds. The piano and vocals are so beautiful. I'm going to make a suggestion here. I'm going to even type it out so you remember. The album is called Tarot Suite by a British rock composer and rock and classical composer like Mike Batt, B-A-T-T, Mike Batt, B-A-T-T. Tarot Suite was an album I was half obsessed with when I was in my teens. It's got a clever one song is called The Dead of the Night, and the other one is called The Night of the Dead. It's clever. Imbecile is a fantastic song on that album, as is Losing Your Way in the Rain is sweet. I'm not a big fan of Lady of the Dawn, but there's an eagle in the eastern sky turning in the wind out upon the evening. Resting on the wing. One day it's Run Like the Wind. Run Like the Wind is also a great song on that. So, yes, Tarot Suite, that's a headphone thing. That's a headphone thing. I went through a long phase in theater school of being into Broadway tunes, show tunes, and so on, because that's just my voice works a little bit for that kind of stuff, kind of better. But Minecraft music. So, any other questions, comments about music? Changing subject. I've been using the Taoist book I Ching for decades. Wasn't I Ching a manual for cash registers? Do I have that wrong? Have you come across it? I have. I mean, I've heard of it. I've never read it. What's your philosophy of music? Harmony of the spheres, etc. Philosophy of music. So music evolved to show reproductive fitness, right? So singing is related to very fine motor controls and your ability to process what you're hearing, right? Singing also has something to do with, do you have empathy for the audience? Do you know how you sound? And so singing is empathy. Singing is fine motor control. Drumming and rhythm and so on is being able to keep a good beat. And there's a certain amount of just fitness and so on. So I think it evolved for those reasons. And so this is why singers are considered to be spectacularly sexy, because they're so amplified. And this is maybe why the women are screaming. It's like the Beatles being amplified is a super sensory thing, because having a loud voice and having good hearing and having fine motor control is sexy for women. And so maybe the Beatles being amplified is a super stimuli for their sexual arousal, and therefore they scream and they have a response which is super amplified in return. So, yeah, you mentioned Jerry Springer, the opera. Yes, there's some bad music out there. You know, we're trying to talk about things that we love and you're bringing up this trash. I don't know. I mean, do you often spray paint art? Thoughts on the causes of schizophrenia? I mean, I think there's a genetic component, but I don't think it's entirely genetic. I think that schizophrenia comes out of impossible situations combined with drug use as self-medication. And I think that there's some Danish studies where they've tried to use non-medical ways of dealing with schizophrenia, and I think they've had some real success. So I'm wondering what your thoughts are on the subject of UAPs. I never quite understand when people ask me for acronyms, like XB4, what's your thoughts? I mean, it's you want me to do 10 minutes on a subject, but you don't want to type anything out? I don't know. I have no idea what that means, UAPs. All right, any other last comments, questions, issues? Is there a band or a song that you liked in the past that you just really dislike now? Like, I remember there was I used to buy every Sting album religiously, although his last one was just really bland and boring. But what was it? Came after 10 Summoner's Tales. The Soul Cages, a really good album. Boy, that Under the Dark Star Sail, Over the Reefs of Moonshine. The song he's got about the death of his mother, Why Should I Cry for You? Beautiful song, beautiful song. And there was a song in it called The Wild, Wild Sea that I found atonal and unpleasant. And actually, this is one of the few times where a review really changed my view of the music, because the reviewer was saying, if you listen, it's discordant, like the sea and the drums and the cymbals are reproducing the ocean and so on. And once I got back into that, I listened to it with a much greater appreciation. There's a great line about post-religious society. If a prayer today is spoken, please offer it for me. For the bridge to heaven is broken, and we're lost on the wild, wild sea. Yeah, on relativism and subjectivism. The bridge to heaven is broken, and we're lost on the wild, wild sea. Just amazing. Can you talk about the Canadian economy? It's a very general, it's a very general statement, my friend. When I was depressed, I used to listen to a lot of Massive Attack and Bjork, such awfully depressing music. Yes, well, when I was going through, you know, my haunted by maternal mad ghost phase in my mid-teens, I listened to Side 3 of The Wall every night before going to bed. Got a little black book with my poems in. Got a bag, got a toothbrush and a comb in. But I'm a good dog, they sometimes throw me. Pony. Got elastic bands keeping my shoes on. Got those swollen hand blues. I got 14 channels of shit on the TV to choose from. Yeah, it's really haunting and just amazing, right? Do you mind going back to a point about the Sound of Freedom? No, it's called, Sound of Freedom. I kept putting a bit in front. And all of that. And just a reminder that I got the kids' ages a little bit wrong on that. I put a note at the end of the show, but just to remind you. He says, I agree that the father's behavior was disgusting, but with that said, I read the following, which may shed a little light on otherwise incomprehensible actions. I'm happy to hear. I obviously don't want to have opinions that are incorrect relative to people's honor, so I'm happy to hear. The woman was famous and very trusted. Any idea how many words per minute you read? Yeah, the woman was famous and very trusted in the community. How could she be trusted in the community if she was a child trafficker, right? And also, I mean, I assume that the father is teaching his children not to judge things by other people's perspectives. That's called opposing peer pressure. So the fact that the woman was trusted in the community, I mean, how could she be trusted? I mean, I don't know when this was occurring, but I assume it was after the internet. So wouldn't anyone have ever said, gee, you know, I took my kids to this woman's talent show and they got kidnapped. Like, nobody had ever written about that. There'd never been any allegations. Like, it was never written about online. Nobody had ever complained about it. You know, you vet everyone, don't you? You vet everyone. Everyone you don't know, you have to vet. Isn't that sort of child protection 101? I feel like that would make it on the Yelp reviews. Yeah, maybe. Maybe. Yeah, I find it hard that there would be this repetitive kidnapping of children and nobody, and given the internet, like, no reporter had ever dealt with it. Nobody had ever written about it. It was never known about it. No reports were ever made to the police. Of course reports were made to the police, right? All right. Let me just see if we've got any last... Ooh, babe, when I pick up the phone, there's still nobody home. Of course, the guitar on Comfortably Numb is also, like, staggeringly fantastic. Although I think that was one of the songs that broke up the band. Oh boy, you want to hear a great song? Listen to the last album, which is basically Roger Waters' solo album under the name Pink Floyd, from the album The Final Cut. Listen to The Gunner's Dream. Oh, so good. Floating down through the clouds, memories come rushing up to meet me now. It's amazing, beautiful song. Hey, Steph, how can a dream about strangulation be interpreted? I was being shown how to avoid getting strangled in it. Yeah, strangulation is usually an analogy for censorship or self-censorship, right? For avoidance of... speaking openly, you're strangled, right? Any last donations, support for the show? I know I've been rambling about music, which I hope is fun for you. And yes, thank you. I appreciate that tip. Thank you, Chris. Anybody else wanted to support? If you're listening to this later, of course, freedomain.com/donate. I would really, really appreciate your help and your support. It doth mean the world to me, and... I have to spend quite a lot on the research and on the materials for the Peaceful Parenting book. But I promise you it's going to be fantastic. I promise you it's going to be something that's going to be case closed for eternity as far as peaceful parenting goes. So if you'd like to help out with that, you're listening later, freedomain.com/donate. And if you would like to help now, if you're on the app, you can donate directly from the app. And if you're watching elsewhere, you can go to freedomain.com/donate right now, of course, and help support the show. I would really appreciate that. There will be a print version for sure. Going to play Diablo 4. I've tried a little bit of it. It's a bit of a button masher, isn't it? Like, you just boom, just going from monster to monster and bashing, even on sort of normal mode. It seems a bit repetitive. There doesn't seem to be that much strategy involved in it. So I have not found it to be particularly grabtastic as far as attention goes. But, you know, maybe I'm missing something about it. Maybe it gets more. Well, Doom. No, but see, Doom, you've got different weapons and different strategies. You're always dodging. You're moving, whether you go and get the health and whether you got a chainsaw the demons to get the ammo. Like, it's a lot of immediate 3D hysterical strategizing. Whereas Diablo 4 just seems to be a bit of a button masher. So the original Doom. Yeah, that was incredible. Yeah, I still remember playing Wolfenstein 3D. I still remember... Achtung! Playing The original Castle Wolfenstein on an Atari 800. On an Atari 800. Boy, you can go look that stuff up. I actually, gosh, what did I get? Starhawk. Starhawk was an old vector graphics game. So let me tell you how, I guess, I think most kids are like this, right? So every now and then I'd get a quarter or two together. And there was a game over at the Don Mills Mall called Starhawk, which was a vector graphics game originally supposed to be about Star Wars, but I don't think they could get the rights, so they changed like three things or whatever. And it was spaceships flying over a trench and you had to shoot the spaceships. And of course, when I got the quarters, I would imagine an emergency call from Star Command that I, you know, the invaders were coming and the whole backstory, and I had to get to the turret. And so I literally would whip myself to a frenzy and I would literally run over. I lived across from the mall. I'd run over to the mall at the age of 11 or 12 or however old I was, and I would get my activation discs to power up the guns, and I'd have a whole backstory, and I got a whole world going about why I had to do this battle. I couldn't just play a video game. I had to have a whole backstory and a whole thing about how to play this game. Anyway, I was just farting around the other day while waiting for something. And I don't know if you've ever seen MAME. Do you know what MAME stands for? This is the thing. MAME. Let's see how nerdy can we get here. Yeah, but you know what it stands for? No. So MAME is an acronym for Multiple Arcade Machine Emulator. So it's a piece of software that can emulate just about every arcade machine. And if you can get the ROMs, you can load up the games and they will work on your computer. And it's free for the most part. And so I did, believe it or not, I got Starhawk, the game from like, I don't know, close to 50 years ago that I played. I got Starhawk running on my Monster i9 computer, which I use for the show. And it was pretty funny. I remembered it, and I had all these, I remember this, and I remember that, and it's pretty funny just how you can get this. I remember getting Star Raiders, which was a game on the Atari 400 and 800 that was incredible and fantastic, and the guy who wrote it never got a penny, even though it sold millions of machines, but it was a cartridge game. Star Raiders was absolutely fantastic. I got that running once on the computer as well. Just, you know, I find, you know, there's this certain midlife thing that you get kind of nostalgic for the things of your youth back when you had hope. So, yeah, it is really, really intoxicating. My wife, a couple of Christmases ago, got me an Atari 2600 emulator, and that was pretty fun playing those games, those old games again, with the tanks, that highly pixelated rotation tanks and all of that. Actually, I had a meme that was pretty funny. I had a meme that was pretty funny. Let me see. It was about people who play old games. let me see. Did I get it here? Is it here or somewhere else? Lord knows. Like, what do you do, right? What do you do when you just have so many different places that you can store your photographs? Don't you just kind of give up? Oh, is this one funny? Oh, yeah, I thought this was pretty funny. Let's do another meme. Let's do a meme or two. You started playing Command & Conquer again? I never played that. There was a game that I used to play with friends. It was one of the... You could actually play four people. And it was called MULE. That was an acronym. It was basically a resource exploration, a foreign planet. You get your stuff together. I remember having such a blast playing that game with friends back in the day. Man, it was something else. And I'm sure I could get that running again, but I wouldn't even know how to get four players working on that anymore. All right, let's just try one more place here. Yes, here we go. I got it. This is the meme. People who play old games despite bad graphics. I don't know if you know the Uber Chad guy, but I saw this and I actually thought it was pretty hilarious. So I will share it with you. There we go. I'm going to do social reviews. Yeah, I keep meaning to do it, and I've got a bunch of stuff saved up, but I just haven't got around to it yet. I will do the social media reviews again. I loved Star Tropics back in the 90s. You had to dip the booklet in water to get a code to play a piano in the game. Is that right? Wow. 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 Here's a funny one. This is me in 1985. That's one year away from the 1984. David Bowie song, right? Let's see here. Why can I see it on one screen but not another? It shouldn't be. Oh, yeah, I did a whole documentary in the Netherlands, but the guy flaked on me. I did a whole documentary, went to the red light district, talked about a whole bunch of things to do with the Netherlands and prostitution and the sex trade, really great speeches, all kinds of stuff, and then the guy just totally ghosted and faded and flaked. I don't know whatever happened to the guy, but so I did a whole documentary out there, Lust to the Sands of Time. Gosh, what have I got here? The hell? Oh, yeah. Okay, relax. In corner. Yeah, this is for you as well, if you want. This can be used to... there we go. Let me just relax here in the corner until you've come to your senses, sir. I think that's... I'm sure that we could go on and on like these forever, but I think I'll stop right here. But yeah, thanks everyone so much. I really appreciate you dropping by tonight. And we'll maybe do a Sunday show. I've got a call tomorrow with a guy who is trying to figure out whether he should have a child with his wife or his girlfriend when she's continually wanting to commit suicide, whether he should have a child with her or not. So I am, I'm going to be working on that tomorrow. So I've got some work going on. All right. Thanks, everyone, so much. Lots of love. Have yourself a great evening. Freedomain.com/donate to help out the show. I'd really appreciate that. Lots of love, y'all. Bye.